Hello everyone, and welcome to Minute 75 of Season 10 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we hijack our way through the 1974 action thriller, The Taking of Pelham 123, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again in order to finish off this week is Alan Sanders of The Alan Sanders Show. Welcome back, Alan.
Thank you, sir, and a happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday to you, and hopefully you've figured out what to do now that the lights are back on.
Okay. Yeah, the power just came back.
That's right. That's right. We're
unfortunately, I'm not the one putting stacks of cash everywhere. Generally, in my household, all my kids, all the stacks of cash were going to them.
When the lights are out.
Not when the lights are out.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were talking about in this, you know, from what we talked about yesterday with the minute, how the power came back.
Right. No, I was.
Yeah. Okay. But we also saw Robert Shaw putting all his money in his pockets. And
that's right.
So I'm never putting money in my pockets. I'm always taking it out and giving it to other people. Usually, again, my kids.
Yeah. That's the way that parents need to do that stuff.
I jokingly said that if you open my wallet, what you would see is like your typical revolving door to like a hotel or anything. The money comes in on one side and immediately goes right back out.
All right. That's the way these things work.
Yep.
I generally try not to walk around with cash for that very reason, so that my kids don't need to take the cash. because, you know, most things you can just use credit cards for. So it makes it a little easier from that perspective. And I mean, people now pay with their phones. I haven't reached that point yet where I'm willing to do that. You know, I know.
Oh my gosh, I have. It's changed everything using my Apple Pay with a phone, and I've got the default card, and I've got my other cards already in my digital wallet. Oh my god, it changed everything, dude. I love it. I love using my phone to pay.
Okay. Wait, so you don't even credit card anymore from that perspective? Or it only works?
No, you digitally add your credit card to your wallet in your iPhone, and then when you use your iPhone to pay, you pick which card, and it automatically has all the credential information, and then you just tap your phone, and it charges that card.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's trust me, the first time I did it, I was like, I'm going to look like an idiot because I don't know what I'm doing, and I double-clicked and leaned it close, and all of a sudden I hear beep, and then it says, that the payment went through. And I was like, oh, that is cool.
All right. Maybe one of these days I'll have to look into that. I see people doing it all the time in the store, but, you know, I don't know. I just don't find it to be, safe to do that. That's my perspective of it.
Why? If you have your phone set up, does you have to use your face to unlock it? Nobody can use it unless they can unlock your phone.
And, well, come on. We know that people know how to get through security on phones very easily.
Well, they're not going to be able to unlock your phone unless you're there and they're making you show your face to the phone. And if that's the case, then you got other problems than them just charging using your phone.
That's true. This isn't demolition.
And I will tell you this. It has made it a lot easier unless you and your wife each have like matching cards. Like we had just one Amex. And the reason why we had the one Amex is because if you used it for groceries, it gives you 3% back. So we were like, well, why not get paid to go grocery shopping? Because we're going to spend the money anyway. We've got the cash. As soon as we pay the bill on the credit card, we then turn around and pay it right off, and we've made 3%. But we only had the one card. So we were like, do you have the Amex? No, I thought you had the Amex. Now it doesn't matter. I've got it built into my phone. She's got the card. We're both good.
Okay. That works. And actually, that's actually food for thought, because – the same thing works with my wife's card, that there are certain supermarkets where she gets, I think, 6% off or whatever it is or anything you buy there, but she's got the card, not me. So
right. If you add it to your digital wallet, you'll have it on your phone.
Interesting.
Look at that. Now I've learned you something.
Yes, you have. There you have. Technology. I'm the, you know, the old man who doesn't know anything about technology. You know, that's the thing. Get off my lawn.
We're kids. I would have gotten away with it, too.
That's right. Thank you, Scooby-Doo, impersonator. So, minute.
Scooby-Doo.
That's right. Scooby-Doo-Doo. It's really funny now that you mentioned Scooby-Doo. It's just really funny that, you know, as kids you don't realize the amount of drugs that Scooby and Shaggy all take. Scooby snacks are
Shaggy's a definite stoner.
Yes.
He's like, man, why do you think they're eating all the time? They got the munchies.
But aren't the Scooby snacks drugs? Isn't that the whole? I always thought that was the connotation.
I always thought that they were just like energy bites, like they like dog treats. But okay.
Nada. All right. So minute 75 begins with Blue zipping up, and ends with Rico once again a little confused. So now that the lights are back on in the train, Mr. Blue finishes putting all his wads of cash in his vest and jacket and all the other places that the other pockets that he has. And he stands up and says, "All right, ladies and gentlemen, pay attention to me again, will you? Please. In a little while, we hope to be moving again. Then, with a bit of luck, you'll all be released unharmed. Until then, of course, you'll continue to obey my orders. Thank you for your cooperation." Now, it's just really weird. This sounds like a public service announcement, the way that he's saying this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, you know, he's talking to them. It's not like he's in the cockpit of a plane reading off these, you know, his demands and instructions to the passengers, something like that. It's just weird the way that he does this. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as he's talking, we see Mr. Green go to the other end of the car to get off of the car. And, you know, Gray is still keeping his gun on everyone to make sure that, you know, everything stays under control. Mm-hmm. And then the pimp says to him, "Hey, dude, as long as you're going downtown anyway, you mind dropping me off at Fulton Street?" He goes, "You're a wise mother, you know that? Mm-hmm. Would you like some more?" And he shows him the butt of the gun. This because, you know, he hit him in the face with the gun, you know, a few months ago. But
right, well, for you, yeah.
Yeah. It's just interesting that they would have this character basically take a risk like this by saying this. He's seen mm-hmm. them kill people. So, like, why, you know, why antagonize them? You know, that's the thing I don't get.
Right. Well, and that, again, this kind of goes back to some of the general commentary of the whole week of that time frame with, you know, these guys negotiating and saying, you know, things over the radio, like, you need some serious help and, you know, you're a real idiot. I hope something happens. I mean, it just feels like maybe we're in a different time where people weren't thinking, I better watch what I say.
Could be. Again, and like, he also takes off his hat as he's talking to him, you know, like he's feeling very confident that he's able to make this comment without anything happening to him. You know, and you mm-hmm. see the old man sitting next to him that looks scared out of his wits. You see the two co-eds also not very happy that this guy's, you know, talking back. And, I mean, Gray even gives a nice big smirk when he's getting ready, when he says he's going to, you know, give him another hit in the face with the gun.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, another thing that I noticed about this, which nothing to do with what you're talking about. It just popped in my head just now. From a continuity, you know, we keep talking about the clocks. For Hector Alessandro to always be smacking his gum and to be consistent, and you know this was days and days and days of shooting, but to be present enough to go, well, my character is always chewing gum. Like, I just happened to notice this again. Like, he's just smacking his gum. He's one of those, like, open-mouthed chewers. It drives me nuts. But he's very consistent with his character.
Yeah. I wonder if it's real or if it's fake. You know, whether he's just pretending to be really chewing gum or you know, whenever they take a break on the set, all right, give me another pack of Juicy Fruit. I don't know, whatever.
I know, it looks like he's chewing something. And I don't think he's faking.
Again, it could be that he's pretending to be chewing something, as you said, because, you know, he's in character, I guess.
Yeah, but it'd be a lot easier if he had actually something to chew. It's just the consistency from scene to scene. And by the way, the camera work, I don't think we've ever talked about it. We talked about how all these extras just feel so real. A lot of it feels almost improvish. But have you paid attention to just how much this camera moves in these tight spaces?
Yeah. And we've talked a little bit about it, but you know, you're an expert on camera moves, so feel free to.
Well, I just like it because sometimes, you know, the camera's fixed, so you can tell when it's rock solid. You know, it's on a tripod or something. But there's also been where it's pushed in, it's pulled back, it's kind of twisted around. It's almost like tilting to give us whatever view the director wants us to see within the scene. But in the confines of this car, it's pretty amazing that they're able to make these kinds of moves and pivots at the same time, fixed positions, and all being in a subway car. It makes you feel like you're actually sometimes in the car with the people, because notice the different angles. Like when it's from the perspective of the pimp, it's kind of angled a little bit down because it's from Mr. Gray's perspective. And then when we get the reverse, it's actually shooting up. And it's now we're sitting on the chair at the same eye line
right.
of the pimp looking back up. And just simple things. It's little things that you, as if you're not a movie, if you've never made a movie, if you've never analyzed how movies are made, if you've never gone to school on it or whatever, you don't even think about it. But the movies that are just better than others are usually those hundreds of tiny small things that you don't think about, but it makes the difference in the overall picture. And I've, through the whole film, every time we're in the car, every time we're in the subway car, you never feel like the camera's crowded, and yet it's always moving around, and you always feel like you're there. It's just very well done in terms of the camera work here in this cramped setting.
Right. Sure, and just wait until we get back into the cab itself. You know, mm-hmm. Talk about being cramped.
Well, and I meant to say that the other earlier this week, when they decided to go outside and film Mr. Blue from the window, but the camera still pushed into him when he was giving his list of demands. It was, again, the camera, it's little things, it's subtle, but it makes you feel like you're more into the scene. And when it pushes in on him, you're being, it's like it's forcing the audience to realize, okay, the camera's moving into this guy. We should be really, as if you're not supposed to be paying attention, but you kind of get drawn into the demand. You get drawn into his character. You get drawn into what's happening. And I've just been really happy with the camera movement through much of this, especially when you think about a cramped scene on a subway car that, for the most part, once it comes to a stop, isn't moving. And then you've got the command center where people are moving around, but they're just stuck in a room. You're literally, it's a film between two rooms.
Right. It's true. So I guess you're a fan of Owen Roizman's work as the DP here.
So far, and I didn't know who the director of photography was, but I'm well enough aware to pay attention to where the camera is and how it moves and how it helps tell the story.
Right. Okay.
When it comes to my background, I am a big fan of making sure you understand camera placement and movement and why it's so important for telling the scene. Whether, again, the hero shot looking up, you know, whether you light from above or below. I mean, all the things that go into the little details that nobody would probably think about, but taken as a whole actually can enhance the picture.
Right. Okay. I mean, just to give you a little bit of background on the DP here, Owen Roizman, he was nominated 5 times for an Oscar for best cinematography for The French Connection, The Exorcist, Network, Tootsie, and Wyatt Earp. I know you're a fan of Wyatt. No, you're not a fan of Wyatt Earp. You're a fan of the other one.
I'm a fan of Tombstone.
Tombstone, exactly. The other movie from the same year that tells the same
story. Okay, now you got me on a rabbit trail. Do you know why Wyatt Earp doesn't really work as well as Tombstone?
Kevin Costner.
No. Wyatt Earp was actually being developed as like a 10-part miniseries. It was a huge script. And it was shelved when they realized, well, these Westerns aren't really doing so well anymore. We're not going to put all that kind of money in a 10-part miniseries. Then they found out Tombstone was being made, and it was about this whole idea of Wyatt Earp. And they're like, oh, didn't we have that script? Well, you had a script that was designed to be a 10-hour-long film, you know, or whatever, taken out for commercials, maybe 8 hours. And they were like, well, can't we condense it? So they tried to basically take something that was meant to be a miniseries, an episodic thing, and convert it into a 3.5-hour movie. So, of course, it felt like you had cut things out and that it was kind of kludged together, because it kind of was.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I'm actually a fan of it. But
Oh, no, it's not bad. And I honestly, Dennis Quaid kind of got overlooked for his version of Doc Holliday. I don't think he did a bad job. I just think when you compare him to Val Kilmer, Val Kilmer just outshined him.
It came out at the exact same time as Tombstone, so there was this big, I guess, fight in Hollywood between Kevin Costner and Kurt Russell, you know, trying to get their version made first. But Tombstone came out.
In reality, if you're going to be honest, Wyatt Earp is probably better in terms of overall source material and getting things factually correct, but Tombstone is the superior film.
Right. Okay.
It's just it's, as a film, and again, ironically, a buddy of mine that we do a show on the radio, he was really good friends with Kevin Jarre before he passed away, but Kevin Jarre is the guy who wrote the screenplay, Tombstone, and initially had directed a couple of weeks before they realized he wasn't a good director and they fired him. But Kevin Jarre was told multiple times, you know, factually, it didn't happen that way. He goes, yeah, but we're not telling history. We're telling a movie. And he knew enough to say, yeah, I want to be correct, but not at the expense of bringing the movie down or slowing it down or making it feel boring. We're here to tell a film that the audience is going to watch from start to finish. So I appreciate that. You know, he knew he was making, he was taking some license with the story to keep the story moving.
Oh, wow. I see that Kevin Jarre wrote also The Mummy and Glory and and Rambo First Blood 2. Wow.
Oh, he's a very, before he died again, very good screenwriter.
Yeah, no, he's got some great things on there. Back
Sorry.
To Callum 1-2-3.
Oh, yeah. What movie are we doing?
Exactly. Yeah, so, you know, Mr. Grey doesn't really like this bad mouthing, but doesn't. He uncharacteristically basically just holds himself back here as opposed to doing something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the shot changes and we're in the cab itself. And Mr. Green starts pulling some levers and the train starts to move. And then Green says, this will give him a jolt even before they expected it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great line because it's also telling it's foretelling us what's going to happen, you know, because it's just a few seconds of shot of the two of them on, you know, on the train as it's starting to move. And I love the way that they tell us that it's moving by the fact that we see the reflection of a light pass mm-hmm. in front of them, in front of the glass mm-hmm. in front of them. You know, I think that's a great storytelling way. You know, for us to notice that the train is supposed to be moving. You know, whether it's really moving in reality or not is something else. You know, in the reality of the movie, it's moving.
Mm-hmm. No, it works very, very well. And it's also, again, when I watched it the first time, it's yet another indication that Mr. Green knows more about the subway than maybe we learn along the way that he's obviously somebody who knows a lot about the inner workings of the subway system and was very well aware that, okay, we're going to send a jolt. In other words, they're going to know we're moving. He knows they're going to know because he understands how this works.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the shot a few seconds and we see the board again. And, you know, we can see that the lights are moving. The great character actors that we've seen in the past that are looking at what's going on here. You know, in this control room, they just notice what's going on. So we have I'm trying to remember their names because they never again they don't tell his name. One of them is Marino. Marino is the bald guy, played by Robert Weil. We've talked about him, and I think the second one is Musket. I'm not really sure. I don't remember who they're. And they're just looking and they see that the train is now moving along, and then he turns to he goes look at this, holy Christ, she's moving! What the hell's going on here? They promised to wait until mm-hmm. we clear the track all the way down. Jenkins, get command center. And then Mrs. Jenkins gets on the radio and goes, Grand Central Tower calling command center. And then Garber responds and goes, yeah, this is command center, she's moving. And he goes, who's moving? Helen 1-2-3. What? Since when? It just started. He goes, hold on, I'll put you on a tie-in. And then he pushes a couple buttons, and then he goes, Rico, she's moving. And then we get another shot of Rico, and he goes, "Who's moving?" Now, I love the comedy here, and I'm sure that on Monday I'm going to talk even more about it because it continues. But it's just great the way that they're able to milk this joke so much. You know, the exact same joke, but just with so many different people in different situations where none of them, they should know what they're talking about, but they have no idea what they're talking about. Yeah, mm-hmm. So I like that.
You know,
again, it says something about the editing here that they're able to put that together also so well.
There's also, which I like, these little small things because it's less than a minute. I mean, literally, in terms of the film watching, it's less than a minute from when Garber is, you know, throwing our friend who's in charge of the trains to the ground. And yet, to give us the sense that it's been more than just 30 seconds, when we come back to the command central here, this other guy is now in a completely different spot on the phone doing whatever he's doing as the camera starts on him, ironically, before coming back to Garber, which gives you the sense there's been some time that's passed. So even though it's been 30 seconds or 40 seconds of film watching for all of us in the audience, we instantaneously know it's probably been 10, 15 minutes.
No, it hasn't been 10, 15 minutes. That we know it hasn't because we're going to see the clock and we're going to know that it's not. It literally is just 2-3 minutes, but it's more than the 1 minute screen time. That's
well, okay, fine. But the fact is, some amount of time has passed because Mr. Green has gone back to pick up Mr. Blue has gone back to pick up his money. He's addressed the audience. He walks forward. He goes back. We're going to give him a jolt, whatever.
Right. And Frank's on the
phone. I like it.
You're right.
I like it because you've got Frank just kind of in a completely different station. He's not in his normal place. He's on the phone with somebody. It's almost like, I mean, why start on this shot except to show us some time has passed since they had their kerfuffle.
Right. Now, did you like the way that they panned in, they zoomed in on Garber as, you know, he's dealing with the two different radio sets, I guess you could say. He's got one on his right and one on his left.
Mm-hmm.
The camera.
Well, what I like is the camera does a fast, before it does that, when it's on, what's his name, Frank? No.
Yeah. Frank.
When it's on him, it does such a fast pan that it's almost blurry. Like everything goes in a blur until it locks onto Garber. And it sits there for a minute. And then that slow, literal push in is great because it's not a zoom. It's the camera itself is dollying into that shot, which I love. And I love the half-ripped box of a bear aspirin
yes.
in the foreground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, somebody must have been just, you know, chewing some aspirin for the headaches or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, but it's just nice product placement.
About that. Yeah, for sure. I wonder if it's considered product placement because it's ripped. You know, it's like it's not full. You know, the R is missing. So is that considered something that you don't need to get permission to use or something like that?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what the rules are. I'm assuming barely-minded.
Probably not.
But I do like the camera dollying in. Which means you, from a technical perspective, what that means is you have somebody pushing the camera. You've got the camera operator inside the camera, and you probably have a focus puller who's trying to make sure that as the camera's getting closer, they're moving the focus just enough so it stays completely on Walter Matthau's character to stay in focus, even though the camera is moving closer to him, which is a great, you know, it takes a team effort to make that shot work. But again, it puts us as the movie watching audience into almost like we become more intent on what he's doing. We become more focused on him and his actions, which is great.
Right. Yeah, I agree. We're going to have to wait until Monday to find out how this mystery is solved as to who they're talking about.
Right. Well, I also think this is interesting, too. And I don't think we've mentioned it this week. But when they've got Garber, what's the difference between the red phone and the black phone? Is it really the emergency phone? Is that what the red phone is for?
Is it one to call Batman?
I don't know. Generally, the hot phone, literally hot red, is for emergencies only. But I'm wondering, and I don't remember the rest of this week.
Is a hijacking considered an emergency?
I would think so. But it's interesting how you don't see any other red phones in the shot on any other desks, only this one.
No, we do see it at Rico's desk.
On Rico's desk, but not here in the command center.
No. That's right. So it's a question of just not having to get in touch with Rico. You know, it's like if you want to call Rico's Batman.
I don't think so, but okay.
Jerry Stiller is Batman. Come on. All right. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about this particular minute or about the movie in general that we haven't touched upon?
You know, I always have wrap-up thoughts and things that, because I know this is my last time to be on the show for this movie.
Maybe forever, but we'll see.
Hey. Can I say, for real, thank you? Because every film you've done up to this point, I'd already seen. I may have had to go back and rewatch to kind of refamiliarize, but I'd seen all the movies until this one. You opened me up to a film that I had never seen before. I knew it was a remake, or I knew that, sorry, I knew they had remade it, and I never saw that either. I'm really happy that I saw this because I've become kind of a fan of this as a 70s film that really set a new benchmark for the kind of heist, kind of hijack thriller. That, yeah, it's not as action-oriented as some of the new techniques. I've said that many times this week. But you've got to have a starting place. And this, as an original story, with an original, like, it just everything seemed really cool to me. Even though I know other movies have now built on this, it was cool to go back and see the film that kind of started that style of heist-slash-hijack filmmaking, because I enjoyed this a lot.
I agree. And I'm glad you were able to do that. And I can't guarantee that my next season, even though I haven't announced what it is yet, I can't guarantee this is going to be something you've never seen. Maybe it's something you have seen. Maybe something you need to refresh your memory with. But we'll wait and see. You
know, now, wait, we're on season 10 right now, right?
We're on season 10. So the season 11 will be my 12th movie because, you know, so, season 9 I did two movies.
So from my perspective, this is the first movie I had to go back and watch for the first time ever. So that means 90% of everything you've done, I'd already seen.
I don't know if that's a plus or a minus.
Well, it just means that whatever you're going to do next, there's a likelihood I've already seen it. But if I haven't, I'd be happy to go watch it now.
In other words, what you're telling me is that I have the next 10 seasons. I have the opportunity of choosing one that you haven't seen yet, but the other nine should be. Okay. All right.
Based on the current statistical analysis, I've seen 90% of the movies that you are doing for your show.
Okay.
Well, technically now I've seen 100%, but I had to go watch this movie to get prepared.
Right. Right.
And ideally you'd like to believe all of your guests have actually watched the movie, but you know, I know how this goes too.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so every Friday we have a segment called Fun City Friday, where my guests will give their top five movies that take place or revolve somehow around New York City. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
All right. And this one was tougher than I thought. When I first started going through this, I just put down a couple of movies like, oh, that's easy, that's easy. Then I started going, well, wait a minute. There's a lot of movies set in New York. So now how do I pick my top five films set in New York? So number five, I went with one that I thought was a really cool movie when it came out. It was kind of a smaller movie. It didn't really get a lot of hype. And I think it's one of those ones that's gotten more hype with video rental and stuff. But I know it's got two names, but now I kind of call it just Leon the Professional. But I'm going to go with number five, The Professional.
All right. You are the very first person to mention that one. There you go. Once again, you've gone off the beaten path and chosen something no one else ever had. But that's great.
But I still think as far as a movie set in New York, and it's one of those movies that if I'm just flipping around and I happen to stop on it, I'm just going to be like, well, I know I'm going to like this from this point forward. I'm just going to keep watching it.
Makes sense.
Number four. I don't know how you can't include this in your top five movies that take place in New York City. Taxi Driver with Robert De Niro.
Okay, you are not the first person to mention that one.
Yeah, I'm sure not, because it's just, I mean, let's face it, it is New York City. It's a commentary of that time frame of New York City. So, ironically, a film that you and I discovered, or not discovered, talked about with your Movies by Minutes and delved into and discovered a lot about the movie. Part of the Die Hard trilogy, I picked number three, Die Hard 3. It almost made my number one, but then when I thought about two other movies that I just watch a lot and I think are just phenomenal movies, number two, I had to give to Ghostbusters. It, for a movie that is from the early 80s, I watch it every year around Halloween, and I could watch it almost any time. It is still one of my all-time favorite movies. It is so much fun. So I never get tired of the comedy, the humor, everything about it. And, of course, it's all set in New York City, even with Ernie Hudson yelling, "I love this town," Ghostbusters, yeah. Number two. And number one, I know there's a lot of crime movies that are set in New York. There's hundreds. But I'll never forget my first time watching Goodfellas. And I still think of all of the, quote, crime movies, which I'm a big fan of The Godfather. I love almost all the kind of mobster movies. There's just something about the way Goodfellas is told and shot that I just think it was almost like unique and original, and yet it's still so familiar being a mobster movie. So number one, Goodfellas.
All right. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. Now we will play once again the final time the game of name that remake. We'll see what there's no patent on this one, so don't worry about that. We'll see what comes up for you. All right. So the movie that you get is a movie that originally came out in 1927 and was remade in 1982. Okay. And it's about the son of a rabbi that decides that he wants to become a famous singer.
Oh. When did you say the original was?
1927.
Holy crap.
Sorry, the remake. Wait a minute. Sorry, the remake was 1980, not 1982. Sorry.
No. That's not going to help me. But that, oh my God. Is it, wait a minute. Did they just remake it again recently with Bradley Cooper?
No.
What was the movie that Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga did?
No, huh? you're thinking of A Star is Born.
Oh, crap. Yeah, okay, so it's not that, but it's like that. Dude, I think you got me. I got nothing. I was thinking A Star is Born, so I don't know.
The remake from 1980 starred Neil Diamond. Okay, and the original movie from 1927 starred Al Jolson.
Wait, like the singer Neil Diamond?
The singer Neil Diamond, yes. He starred in the 1980 remake.
What? Oh. Something singer. The singer. The son of a bitch. the pop singer. No, it's not that. It's the singer. Jesus Christ, dude. It's God, it's on the tip of my tongue. The pops. No, it's not the pop singer. What is it called? The it hurts my head, dude. It's right there. It's something singer.
You are correct about that.
The folk singer. No, it's not the folk singer. It's not that. It's the people are yelling at their televisions or TVs or whatever. Not TVs. They're listening at their radios right now or their iPhones, whatever they're listening on. The singer.
Think of different types of music.
The rock singer, the country singer, the pops. Oh my God, the jazz.
The jazz singer. Yes.
I knew singer. I could see it in my head, and I couldn't figure out what the word was that was obscured by too much drinking and too many movies in my head. Jesus Christ, dude. Ah, the jazz singer.
Yes, it was the jazz singer.
Isn't they're doing another Neil Diamond movie, aren't they, with Hugh Jackman? I think Hugh Jackman's playing Neil Diamond in another movie coming out about Neil Diamond, so that's kind of wild.
I mean, I know that there's the Springsteen movie that just came out, but
no, it's one that I know is either in development or getting ready to be released. But I can't remember what it's called. But I saw like he looked like Neil Diamond actually. I was like, is that a Neil Diamond
song? And then song, some blue? Like, no.
Do what?
No, there's
song sung blue. Yeah, that's what song, it is. Song
blue. He plays a guy named Mike. He doesn't play. He doesn't play Neil Diamond. Again, maybe it's based on...
Maybe it's like a Neil Diamond...
No, it's a Neil Diamond tribute act.
Oh, okay. Because it's like Kate Hudson and him together. And I just saw him. He looked like Neil Diamond. But here's the thing. So, like, in the studio, when I do my morning show, we always have the TV on. And so we're tied into one of our Fox affiliates in Atlanta. So it's not like Fox News. It's like the Fox Channel, Channel 5. And I remember they'll do an entertainment segment, but we don't have the sound on because obviously we're on the radio. And I just remember seeing, and I remember it said Song Sung Blue, and I saw him. So I thought it was a Neil Diamond movie, but it's, I guess, kind of Neil Diamond-ish.
Okay, right. It's all about here the IMDb synopsis is: Lightning and thunder, a Milwaukee husband and wife, Neil Diamond tribute act, experience soaring success and devastating heartbreak in their musical journey together. Well, I'd never heard of it, and I've now put that on my watch list to check out because it does sound
I think it,
somewhat interesting. Let's come out
I'm
on
sure.
Christmas Day
Yeah, it's a
next month.
Christmas movie. Well, Christmas release, but I also think whenever you have a movie that's released, like in the last couple of days of the year, generally you're thinking you want to get the Oscar buzz. You want to be one of the last movies that makes it underneath the wire to be considered for an Oscar.
Right. I mean, so
So
far
we'll have to wait and see.
as of now, it won a Gotham Award for the won a musical the tribute award in musicals. I don't know what a tribute award is for the Optimum Awards, but whatever. Maybe it just means that people liked it. I don't know. All right, excellent. So, Alan, would you like for one final time this week and this season to tell people where they can find Alan Sanders?
Sure, super easy. If you just Google the Alan Sanders Show, and if you want to add to it, like the Alan Sanders Show, Spotify, Alan Sanders Show, Apple, Alan Sanders Show, Google Play, whatever you like to listen to shows on, just Google that, you'll find it. And I'm also on the social medias. YouTube, Facebook, X, Instagram, Getter, Truth Social. I'm on as many places as I think I can to just kind of put the show out there every single day.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movearound.net. So, Alan, thank you once again for joining me and for taking the plunge on trusting me to watch a movie that you'd never seen before.
Phenomenal flick, and yeah, I'm really glad I did. I'm really glad I watched it. It was really good.
All right. I am glad you enjoyed it too. And that you had interesting things to say about it this week too.
And for anybody who's listening, if you've still not watched it, check it out before the end because you're gonna love the way this movie comes to a conclusion. It's really, I was very satisfied with the ending.
So am I. We'll get there. We'll get there. Just another few weeks to go. We got a little over a month left to this season. All right, so I will be back on Monday with a new guest. But until then, achoo.
Gesundheit.